The Armchair Nutritionist with Danny Zetterman.
Fitter, happier, more productive.
Welcome into The Armchair Nutritionist. I am The Armchair Nutritionist, Danny Zetterman. You can follow me on Twitter, at DZetterman, and you can follow me on Instagram, IG Armchair Nutritionist. I am not a nutritionist or dietitian. I call myself the armchair nutritionist, similar to an armchair quarterback that watches the NFL games on Sunday and thinks they know how the game should be played. I have a degree in journalism, I'm a professional broadcaster, and I have a passion for health, nutrition, and fitness. In this day and age with the internet, websites, blogs, and podcasts, if you have a passion and a little drive, you can learn anything from the masters. And I think I've done a good job of educating myself on the subjects that excite me. I'm not here to teach you about health and fitness. I'm here to bring the experts to you to teach us about health and fitness so we can all learn a little something together. I ask the questions that interest me with the hope that you are interested as well. Consider this a Let's Get Healthy 101 class. This is the Armchair Nutritionist Podcast. You're listening to it on the Cap and J Hood Show page. If you like my podcast and you want to hear more of my work, check out my page, Armchair Nutritionist, found right here on the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the Armchair Nutritionist. I am really looking forward to this conversation. My guest today is Aubrey Marcus, the founder and CEO of Onnit, which is a lifestyle brand based on the philosophy he calls total human optimization. Aubrey currently hosts the Aubrey Marcus podcast with over 10 million downloads on iTunes. He's been featured in Forbes on the cover of Men's Health magazine and is a regular on the Joe Rogan Experience. His first book, Own the Day, Own Your Life, is hot off the presses, which is about making one single day of positive choices leading to a lifetime of better living. Aubrey, how's it going, man? What's up?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am doing excellent. I can't complain. The sun is finally shining here in Chicago. We've had a really long winter. How are you doing?
I mean, are you talking about the Blackhawks losing, or are you talking about the weather? What are you talking about?
It's a combination of both, and I'm going to get to the Blackhawks because I know you're tight with two of our guys, but I didn't want to hit you with that just yet. I know you're doing the book tour, and I know you're in New York right now. A lot of your book talks about how you make a couple choices, which you call the process. And I think with, you know, the sports analogies, the Philadelphia 76ers right now, trust the process. The process is a hot thing. But I like what you're doing. But let me ask you this. Is it hard for you to trust your process when you're on the road?
No, it's more essential to trust the process when you're on the road. I mean, this is when it's hard. This is game time. I mean, I launched a book last week. Yesterday, I found out it was a New York Times bestseller, number 6 on USA Today, number 3 on Audible. We got it to number 4 on Amazon. I mean, this is my Super Bowl, my first book, and it's been a wild success, and it's been everything I could possibly muster. I needed every bit of energy, every bit of mental clarity, every recovery technique, everything I could possibly do so I didn't burn myself out and trip over myself on the last hurdle here. And so in times of stress, the process is even more important. Now, it may be a little bit more difficult than when I have my home kitchen and my home, chest freezer and my home sauna and all the things that I can rely on. But nonetheless, you still have to find the ways to get it done because you need it the most.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about your process. The book starts with how you need to wake up in the morning. And it's about light. And it's about this special cocktail that you make for hydration, and it's about moving around. That stuff is great, but let me ask you, with busy schedules, like I mentioned to you that I'm here in Chicago, today is literally the first day that I saw the sun before I stepped into the office. So how would you advise a guy like myself who's not out in the daylight very often because my job, my hours, I've got 3 kids, what kind of advice would you have for us to get around these, to kind of hack our way through the day?
Well, so the reason to get light early in the day is it sets something called your circadian rhythm. And your circadian rhythm is what regulates all the hormones that tell you to be awake and alert and alive and ready to conquer the day, and then also tell you to go to sleep at night and get sleepy like melatonin. And so what you want to do the first thing when you wake up is you want to signal to the body like, hey, we're awake, and let's start that circadian rhythm cycle and get the body going. And there's two ways to mainly do that. One way is through movement, which I recommend in the morning, and that could be anything light, walking your dog, moving around, doing a couple push-ups, anything to get the heart rate slightly elevated and wake the body up. And the other one is light. Now, sunlight's going to be the best, but if you don't have sunlight, there's fancy biohack techniques like the human charger, which are these light-emitting earbuds that actually go in your ears and put blue lights on the photoreceptors in your ears and wake you up, or just expose yourself to the brightest lights you have in your house. You know, I mean, it's oftentimes it'll be pretty dim in the house and won't get exposed to any of that bright blue light that's artificial. And so expose yourself to that. And then, you know, also conversely, when it comes time for nighttime, try to dim those lights as much as possible, because you want to signal to your body that it's time for darkness and it's time for sleep.
Now you talk about the circadian rhythms, and in your book, this is where you reference Duncan Keith, because I guess he was struggling with the fact that, yes, he lives in Chicago, and I've mentioned that we have probably the most miserable weather in the world for about 8 months, and we get 4 months of glory, but he's also constantly in an ice rink, and he's not outside, and he's not getting the regular daylight. So what is the method that he used to overcome that?
Well, I mean, he's a savage, and he's doing a lot of things right. But one of the tweaks that we wanted to make is make sure that he's getting light early in the day, you know, because he was definitely utilizing, you know, caffeine to stay awake and stay alert, and that's fine. But you also want to utilize the natural resources that you have available. So both as soon as he woke up in the day, he actually used a light bed, and then if he couldn't get actual sun, and then also when he woke up from a nap, you know, he would find ways to get exposed to as much light as possible, because he was often taking a game day nap, and then, you know, it would take him a while to get kind of ramped up. So this just supported, you know, his body's natural ability to be awake and alert, you know, without having to have some more caffeine or something.
You talk about game day naps. Now, a nap is something that's glorious. Not many of us have the time in the day to take a nap, but one thing I found interesting in the book is you talk about sleep cycles. We all put a lot of pressure on ourselves to sleep. You know, I got to get that 7 hours of sleep. If I don't get the 7 hours of sleep, I just had a crappy night. I'm not going to function well. I'm going to sound bad on the air. I'm going to do bad at my job. But you mentioned something in the book about shorter sleep cycles, or what did you call them in the book? Were you only needed to get 90 minutes at a time?
Right. So one of the really revolutionary ideas around sleep was proposed by author Nick Littlehale, who worked with Manchester United, worked with a lot of top athletes in the UK. And what he realized, and when he's looking at the research and the science and his own personal experience with these athletes, is that the body is really adept at catching up on sleep. And so to look at sleep as a nightly thing was not exactly accurate. And, you know, you can talk to any of the Navy SEALs that we work with from, you know, or Special Forces guys like Tim Kennedy or Jocko Willink or some of these other guys. And, you know, when you're deployed, you're going to go some days without sleep, and then you're going to have R&R, and you're going to catch up on sleep. People intuitively understand that. And so what Nick Littlehale proposed is that you need 30 to 35 sleep cycles a week. And a sleep cycle is about 90 minutes. So if you figure you're only getting 6 hours of sleep a night, you know, that's gonna be four sleep cycles a night multiplied by seven. That's gonna be 28. So you're gonna be pretty close to in range, even with six hours of sleep a night. And then if you add in naps, which count as a full point on a sleep cycle, and all you need is a 30-minute nap. In Nick Littlehale's model, he calls it a controlled recovery period. Then a 30-minute nap counts as an additional sleep cycle. So if you can get, you know, 2 to 5 naps a week, you're solidly in that range of the amount of sleep cycles that you're ideally trying to target per week. And this just takes so much pressure off a single night. You know, if you get that 4.5 hours of sleep, which is roughly 3 sleep cycles, okay, take a 30-minute nap, and then you're up to 4. And then you're really not that far behind the 8-ball for the week. And if you can get 5 or maybe even 6 the next day with a 7.5-hour sleep and a 30-minute nap, you're fully caught up. You're right on par. You're right on track. And it's just a really good way to think about it. And then the research shows that, you know, when it comes to comparing overnight sleep to more coffee, like more overnight sleep or more coffee or a nap is going to win every single time for mental alertness, focus, clarity. I mean, naps are severely underrated.
So are you a daily napper, or do you try to get them in whenever you can?
I mean, I try to be a daily napper, and there's some days where I get that 8.5 hours of sleep, you know, like whatever whatever gift from the gods comes, and I'm able to just sleep straight through the night, and, you know, I've done all the things right, I've hydrated well, but not drunk too much water before, and I'm not stressed, and everything comes together, and maybe that day I don't need a nap, but every day I can, I'll try to, you know, throw on my binaural beats, and I'll just try to zone out for a little while. You don't actually need to fall completely asleep. You just need to lower your brainwave state somewhere into that deep meditative kind of theta state, you know, kind of beneath the normal waking state where you start to have those daydreams and you're thinking about thoughts that are no longer in your control. And if you can get to that state right before you start twitching, then you're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, it's crazy how when you were talking about sleep cycle and you were citing that study, it's crazy how the way that science changes. You know, I'm 41 years old. I don't know how old you are. But when I was growing up, everyone preached, you got to get 8 hours of sleep. You got to get 8 hours of sleep. And then studies like this come out, and you realize, all right, maybe I don't need 8 hours of sleep. But it takes people time to adapt and adjust to new studies. And one thing I find is I talk to a lot of people about diet and exercise, and people always ask me my tips. And I'm trying to get people over the theory of being fat phobic. And I know you talk about it in your book, where, you know, I work with a guy who's in great shape. He's in his mid-50s. He takes care of himself, but his diet is out of 1997. He's got to have grilled chicken. He's got to have steamed vegetables, fat-free yogurt, egg whites only, no butter. And I'm trying to get across.
Are you trying to get me fired up here? Because when I start hearing egg whites only and fat-free yogurt, I start to get a little fired up. That's what gets me fired up.
Please get fired up, because our job here, what I do here at ESPN Chicago, and I'm talking to Aubrey Marcus, the founder and CEO of Onnit, his new book, Own the Day, Own Your Life, is hot off the presses right now. What I do my day job is I talk and I argue about sports, but I get more heated with these guys that I work with about their diets, because they literally don't get the fact that science changes. And no, saturated fat and cholesterol is not going to cause heart disease. Can you please talk about this?
I mean, it's no longer in question. You know, they've done meta-analyses of all the data, and it's not that the science changes, it's that science becomes better. You know, you start to actually test the right things with the right patient groups and actually look at it with an unbiased viewpoint. And they've done these meta-analyses of like 250,000 people in clinical trials. And what they found is the people that ate the most fat and ate the most cholesterol were the most active, had the least weight, lived the longest. We've got the entire dietary fat thing completely backwards. Now, the only fat that's a problem are the fats that have been fried or things that have been charred, because those put in some anti-nutrients. And I talk a lot about anti-nutrients in my book. But any kind of not like regular saturated fat, like you'd find in egg yolks, or you find in butter, or you find in dairy, that's the good stuff. That's the substrate for the hormones. That's what builds testosterone. That's what trains the body to burn fat. That's what keeps you from having this metabolic ping pong that spikes your blood sugar, and then you flood your body with insulin, and it craters your blood sugar, and you're exhausted, so you have more sugar, and your glycogen levels are overflowing, so your body stores it as fat because you just keep eating sugar, because you're not getting enough fat. Like, it's everything that people used to think is wrong about fat. We need it. We must have it. And if you're not eating fat, you're probably fat.
Preach, Aubrey. Preach. I love to hear that. Okay, but now, guys like you and I, we know what we're talking about when it comes to eating. We try our hardest to stay on track. If you follow your book, you're going to make a single day of positive choices, and you're going to live a great life. But there are times, and I'm guilty of this, I don't want there to be times. I just celebrated my 41st birthday. I went out to dinner with a bunch of friends and my wife. My wife's trying to force a cupcake down my throat, and I'm refusing to eat it. And she's like, live a little. Is there ever a time where you let back, where you're off the reins, or are you all about the positive momentum?
No, totally. I think it would be crazy to not enjoy, you know, if you're in France and there's an eclair shop and you're just like, I'm not going to try that. Don't be crazy. You know, try the croissant, try the eclair, but then use the techniques and tactics to help manage the damage that's going to be done there. You know, so, all right, if you're going to do that, well, it's been proven that if you go for a walk after you eat a high-carbohydrate meal, that's going to help with blood sugar. If you have a couple grams of Ceylon cinnamon, if you have some cinnamon, that's going to help with it. If you have apple cider vinegar, that's going to help with it. So you can do things to kind of mitigate the cost of these indulgences and then get to enjoy the indulgences you know, manage the damage that's done, and just be mindful of what you do the next day. Okay, well, maybe next day you skip all the way through breakfast and allow your glycogen levels to drop a little bit, and then keep it mostly high fat, high protein, high fiber until the next dinner, until you get a good workout. You know, allow yourself the flexibility that the accumulation of your choices is positive, but not every single choice is the linchpin. You're not like an alcoholic barely teetering on, and as soon as you have that first taste of Jack Daniels, you're on a 7-day bender. You know, it doesn't need to be like that. And, you know, you can really taste, enjoy, experience life, and just trust that you have the countermeasures to find your way back to balance, and that you've built up enough positive momentum in the bank that it's when it's time to make a withdrawal, you know, hopefully that's not Oreos at a gas station. We all know what those things taste like. But when there is that chance for that, you know, that cupcake shop that everybody's been waiting in line around the block for, and they got that red velvet, and you're like, I really want to try that. I want to see what it's all about. Go for it. Or if it's Voodoo Donuts with a bacon on top of that glazed donut, yeah, all right, give that thing a try. You know, give that experience a go. And then just understand what to do to counteract it.
Now, you talk about indulging, and you mentioned Jack Daniels. I know a lot of my listeners out there like to have a few pops every now and again. I thought one thing that was really great in the book is you talk about recovering from a night like that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I mean, ideally you want to have the least amount of alcohol to give yourself the biggest buzz. So, you know, because alcohol has to be filtered through the liver. It's going to raise your, it has a bunch of alcohol, sugars. There's some negative effects of alcohol. So ideally you want to have your drinks on an empty stomach. You know, you want to be your own cheap date, you know, and just moderate your drinking so that you feel the effects the most. But then, you know, you don't have to drink as much alcohol. And then you have to battle a few different things. You have to battle the dehydration, and that's going to be with remineralization, particularly with, you know, magnesium and sea salt. That's going to be really important. And then one of the toxic compounds that alcohol builds up is a compound called acetaldehyde. And there's a mineral called molybdenum, which helps break down acetaldehyde. And so you're going to want foods that are rich in molybdenum, like garbanzo beans or hummus is a great example of that type of food. Or take like a mineral supplement. On it has one that has minerals in it. It's called Key Minerals. And that's really going to help you as well. And then glutathione, there's a lot of places that are popping up that have IV places that will actually give you injectable glutathione.
They're all over Vegas, right?
They're all over Vegas. They're in most metropolitan cities. That's a big one. And then the other thing is balancing out the neurotransmitter system that actually makes you feel buzzed from the alcohol. So when you get buzzed from the alcohol, it's because it's increasing this neurotransmitter called GABA in your brain. And to counteract that, the body produces the opposing neurotransmitter called glutamate. And that's what makes you feel all kind of cracked out and like anxious the next day when you have a hangover. So, you know, one of the things you can do is have something with L-theanine, which is a natural amino acid, like matcha green tea. So instead of drinking coffee when you're hungover, drink matcha green tea, and that's going to help you out a lot as well.
You talk about, like, being unconventional in a lot of ways. And one thing that I thought was really refreshing in the book is, like, I put a lot of pressure on myself to work out. I know a lot of guys put a lot of pressure on themselves to work out, but when they get in the gym, it's, I got to lift the heavy weights, or I've got to run on the treadmill, and that's the routine. Weights Monday, Wednesday, Friday, a little cardio Tuesday, Thursday, maybe I'll get in on the weekend. But you talk about unconventional training. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, what's interesting about unconventional training is that it used to be conventional. You know, a lot of the movements that we have been around hundreds, even thousands of years. So we were kind of the pioneers for bringing back a piece of equipment called the steel mace. And this was developed by 12th century Persian warriors and wrestlers to open up the shoulder girdle, to create rotational movement. And it's a type of training that in our current day and age is unconventional, except if you're an MMA fighter, then you're pretty keen on it. And we work with some of the, you know, the world champions in the sport, from Tyron Woodley to Cody Garbrandt. We work with the best of the best of the best. And, you know, so that type of training was once conventional, then became unconventional as we got to standardize Olympic, you know, barbells, and now it's going back and becoming something that people are looking to more, and that includes kettlebells and battle ropes and sandbags and all of these different tools that work with the body rather than trying to get the body to do these really unnatural movements like a overhead snatch with a fixed bar. You know, like that's not a movement that you find any other human primate doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, my wife bought me a set of Onnit kettlebells for my birthday last year, and I had never used kettlebells before. I've heard you talk about them. Of course, I've heard Rogan talk about them a bunch, but I'd never got them. So she got me a set of Onnit kettlebells for my birthday, and I'm telling you, it opened up a whole world of different exercises, and it actually made me feel as if my body was functioning in a different way.
It really does, you know, and a kettlebell will allow you to lift more weight per minute than any other piece of equipment in the world. I mean, the amount of tonnage that you can actually lift with a kettlebell is remarkable. It's a full-body workout. It's going to train multiple systems at the same time. It's going to train the muscles that are behind you that you don't look at but are actually fueling the true strength that you have in your body. I mean, the kettlebells are an incredible piece of equipment, and really when you know how to use a kettlebell, you don't really need much else. I mean, it's an entire gym contained in a single piece of equipment.
Yeah, you have a guy that works out with kettlebells in your Onnit Academy, Eric, something with an L's his last name.
Primal Swolger, Eric Leha. Yeah, I encourage anybody who's interested in kettlebells, just follow at Primal Swolger, and you'll see some incredible things that have been done and an incredible athlete that's been forged purely from using kettlebells and maybe doing a few sprints.
That dude is a beast. I would say, though, to our listeners, don't try everything at home until you know what you're doing. I've tried a few
right.
of the things he's doing, and I find myself laying on my garage floor being like, oh, my God.
Yeah, he is definitely an expert, and he had some online coaching programs, and we're coming out with some coaching programs. I have some basic kettlebell workouts in my book as well that are illustrated that people can check out when they're just looking to get started.
And that dude definitely does not own a shirt. You mentioned training world champions. I'm in Chicago. Jonathan Toews is one of the city's all-time greats. Talk to me about how your relationship with Johnny kind of came to fruition.
Well, that actually came through Duncan Keith. And Duncan Keith came through a friend, Kevin Estrada, who went and played college hockey with him. And I just got to know Duncan. And, you know, Duncan, after talking with him and hanging with him, you know, he was like, oh, man, you got to meet Johnny. And at that point, you know, he set that up and we started hanging and rapping. And both those guys are just constantly looking for ways to be better. You know, they're dedicated to be the best athletes and humans they could possibly be, and you know that's a trait that we have in common. And I have a whole, you know, repertoire of different ideas, from the Onnit tools, which they all love and utilize, to other ideas and other things like utilizing light after the naps, and you know, a ton of other things that we've been able to connect on, and otherwise just, you know, have a great time. Those are some great guys, and it's been a real pleasure to get to know them and hang out and meet the rest of the team, and you know, really be a big part of supporting them over the last few years.
So, are you going to train with Toews in this off season?
Yeah, we're looking at that right now. We might meet again in Sedona, or we might go to Austin, and you know, we're figuring out a time to get together for sure.
Because the NHL is getting—it seems like it's getting faster. He's 29, going on 30. So, I'm sure I speak on a lot of Blackhawk fans. Help him get leaner and quicker for the next season.
All right. If that's the agenda, or maybe you'll just turn into a goon. I don't know. Maybe we'll just do fight training and start beating people up.
I don't know if he's built for that. He's also too good looking to be a goon, and I think he has all his teeth.
I think we were joking about a fight he got in recently on like maybe early in this past season when I went to see him. But yeah, it's more uncommon to see him drop the gloves for sure.
He's had his share of scuffles now and again in his career here in Chicago, but every time it happens, Blackhawk fans hold their breath. Like, that's why you have an Adam Burrish on the ice, so you don't have to fight, Johnny.
Yeah, totally.
All right, last one before I let you go. I could not finish this interview about your book. By the way, I'm Danny Zetterman. I'm talking to Aubrey Marcus of Onnit. His book, Own the Day, Own Your Life, is hot off the presses. You have a chapter about sex. Now, there are some dangers of sex, but you also talk about having better sex. So give me a little of both.
Well, I mean, I think people are well versed on the dangers of sex, right? But I think, you know, to really have better sex, you really got to take the ego out of it. And I think ego is the biggest factor that's limiting our sex life. Ego and lack of education, but both go hand in hand. You know, we all have this idea that we're supposed to be the LeBron James of the bedroom. Well, how? You know, are we actually talking to our lovers? Are we actually listening? Are we actually doing anything to see if we're improving it? Or are we just using our performance as like a mirror, you know, to reflect back on ourselves on what a great guy we are, or how manly we are, or what a good lover we are, you know? And a lot of that is just building the ego rather than being in the moment, you know, listening, being there and enjoying the experience. And I think that's where a lot of people got to get it wrong. That's where I used to get it wrong. You know, I talk about, you know, time in my 20s where I had so much performance anxiety surrounding sex because it was so much of a big deal. I judged myself so harshly on how I performed in bed that I would avoid sexual encounters just because the pain of not performing up to my standards was worse than the pleasure of having sex. And so, you know, you can get caught in these traps no matter what age you're in, where you just put too much onto it, and we need to take that off. We need to get the fun back in it and really enjoy it. And it's one of the most pleasurable experiences in our life, but if the mind gets too deeply in the way, it'll ruin it.
I think another big mistake is if you try to be LeBron in the bedroom, everybody should try to be MJ in the bedroom. I'm just saying, I know you wore the number 23 when you played hoops.
No doubt. You did your research.
Absolutely. Were you a good ball player?
Yeah, I could play a bit. Yeah, I got some, you know, state honors and, you know, never ended up playing in college. But I was, when those guys were in the off season, we'd mix it up and I could always keep up with them.
All right. Good for you. Let me ask you a question. You are so knowledgeable about this. I know your background is through On It, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan. I'm drinking Alpha Brain right now. I use New Mood almost every night. I've got the kettlebells. I've got the MCT oil that's flavored like vanilla. I'm legitimately a fan of the stuff you do. But how did you get so knowledgeable on all this stuff? I ask you questions. You cite studies. You have, you know, the scientific terms for things. What's your background with that?
You know, I think a lot of people think that the way you learn is in school, but I don't think the way you learn right now is in school. I mean, I think the real thought leaders, the cutting edge research, it's coming out on podcasts. It's coming out from the top researchers and the top doctors, and On It brings all of those people to my doorstep. And I spent the last 2 years deeply working with the best of the best. And that's really where you get your education. You go out there and try to get a nutrition degree now, you're going to be 5-10 years behind because it takes a while for these courses to get accredited and the information to get approved. And then there's governing bodies, and those governing bodies have biases, and they have people who've built their careers on other models. You know, so really right now, you know, to get as knowledgeable as you can, you got to really dive into the current information, the current research, listen to people like Dr. Rhonda Patrick and like Rob Wolf and figure out Ben Greenfield, figure out Sean Stevenson, figure out who the masters of our time are, and then go to the primary research and really educate yourself. And, you know, I tried to distill as much of that as I could into this book, which is a great starting point. And then from there, you can just keep escalating.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time, Aubrey. This was a great conversation. I know I learned a lot. I really enjoyed the book. I got the book, the hardcover, but I also got the Audible version of it because, like I said, I listened to your podcast. And, I mean, that must be hard work to record the whole book for Audible. You did it yourself.
That was one of the hardest things I've ever done. 7.5 hours in a row in the studio and just reading aloud with enthusiasm, two producers in your ear. I mean, it was a really intense experience, but I'm super proud of the result, and I'm happy people get to hear my voice on the book.
Well, great stuff. It's a great book. Go out there and get it. Aubrey, thank you for your time, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, man. Great to talk to you.
Absolutely.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I have many others, and there'll be many more to come. You can follow me on Twitter, @DZetterman. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm simply the Armchair Nutritionist on Instagram. Thank you for lending me your ears.
Better, happier, more productive.